Welcome. This is the podcast of Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager.
Welcome to our Care in Action podcast, the podcast of Care Austria. Today we have a truly inspiring guest, Chikondi Chakwuta, and at the moment she is in Malawi, and this is the reason why we do an online podcast. A warm welcome from Vienna, Austria to Malawi and to Chikondi.
Thank you for having me.
As a passionate advocate for climate justice and women's rights, Chikondi works as an advocacy advisor for CARE International in Southern Africa. With a background in environmental science and extensive experience in humanitarian response and gender equality, Chikondi has been a strong voice at global forums like COP26. She believes in solutions that put women and girls at the heart of climate action. So Chikondi, you are a CARE colleague from Malawi, and I'm really glad that you are taking the time. And let's start our conversation now with my first question to you. What inspired you personally to become an advocate for climate justice? Do you still remember the sparkling moment of your interest?
Thank you, Andrea. And it is truly an honor to join this podcast today from a rainy Lilongwe. So I remember what actually drove and fueled my passion for climate justice work, because every time I always go back to that origin. So what happened was I was working with farmers, women farmers in the rural, in the peri-urban setting of Lilongwe. And we were doing some experiments of trying out soil health aspects. So trying out whether to use manure, whether to use fertilizer, and then they have to make the decision on what they then take forward. It is in this moment where we had done everything right, according to the books, but we still faced low yield, and the crop didn't do as we expected, all because we did not receive rain that time. And as we were having a conversation in the field, the women clearly said to me that this is what we are facing. Every day, there is no surety whether what we are putting in will actually lead to what will come out. As simple as that conversation, it really took me to why are we putting a lot of effort into agriculture, into farming, and yet at the end of the day, there is less to get out of it because it's literally out of your control. You know, from that moment, I started having more conversations with women farmers, and it even went to my village experience that we had. So every time we would go on holidays during the rainy season, like now, during the long break, we would spend time in the village with my uncles, my aunties, and my cousins. And it was also this year, it was clearly this year that we also had the same aspect of dryness. So Lilongwe was better off than Zomba, where I come from. There was complete dryness. People had put in all that they could. They had purchased all the inputs to make the farming activity work. But because of the dryness that we were experiencing, the drought that we were going through as Malawi, there was literally nothing that was coming out of it. So for me, it stems from my experience of working with women farmers, but also from that personal experience from a community that has nurtured my parents, that I grew up in, especially during the holidays, that were faced in this, you know, in this point, at this point where you put in all and you are left to the weather to decide for you whether you will actually have something at the end or not.
Let's put it a little bit into context also for our global listeners and also for our appreciated listener community here in Austria. We talk about Malawi, a country in Southern Africa, which is to a high extent still dominated by small-scale farming, so-called subsistence farming in many cases. And the impact of climate change has been felt there for many years. And also for your information, Chikondi, the problems we are discussing today are, as you know very well, are a global phenomena. And the level of impactness is different. But also in Austria, as one of the richest countries in Europe, we go through a drought in winter. Can you imagine that this winter we had nearly nothing of snow in the area of the capital of Vienna? And we have a severe drought now because it is not raining. And if it rains, it's only a small shower. And the impact of that is that our agriculture is also in threat, that our forests are in threat for enormous fires. So what this podcast shows is that we have to work on global solutions in spite of the fact that first sight it might look very remote to talk about farmers in Malawi. If you take a second look and if you live in a global context, which we all have the privilege to do, at least those working for a large global organization like CARE, then you see in an instant that global collaboration, which is very challenged these days, is the key to everything. What is your take on that?
Yeah, so I think this aspect of climate change, I think unlike other emergencies, it sees no borders. Yeah, it sees no borders. And that's why we are seeing rich countries, countries that are still developing, going through these aspects of erratic weather patterns, so unpredictable. And for countries like Malawi that are heavily, heavily invested in agriculture, about 80% of our economy is run by agriculture. You see that if you have that, you know, not that erratic rainfall, dryness that is unpredictable, that even science cannot capture, you have a challenge, because then that means your economy, which is heavily sitting on climatic factors, is changing completely. And because we sometimes have our weather predictions saying that it would be a lot of rainfall, for example, and then when the rainy season comes, it's a different scenario altogether. That unpredictability as well is putting more and more burden on the communities, on the farmers, because it means you have to go back and forth in terms of accessing farm inputs. If you have a village savings and loans group, that means you are going more and more into debt to get that money to ensure that you are purchasing more seed. Just an example right now, we have had three times that people have grown their crop. So we had our first rains in November. People planted because we were expecting heavy rainfall, good rainfall after drought. So that after the planting happened, 2 weeks or so dryness, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, then the crop wilted. Then people planted again. Same scenario. So November, December has been replanting and replanting. We've had even the latest replanting as early as January this year. That is the crop that has actually sustained itself. But because now we are getting to the end of our rainy season, we are going to experience those challenges of, it will not reach full maturity before time. So climate, and with this, I really want to extend that message to say climate sees no borders. That is why we all need to be concerned when it's happening, whether in Austria, whether it's happening in Malawi, all over the world. These climatic impacts do change our livelihoods in massive ways. Weather has a huge impact on how we do our day-to-day operations.
You have said, Chikwandi, you have shared with us that 80% of the population in Malawi is working in agriculture, which is an enormous amount. So my question is, in your work at CARE and in your citizenship in Malawi, do you see alternatives, at least for a part of this 80%, that they might move in the near future to other economic sectors? Or do you think that 80% also in 5 years' time will still struggle with the impact of climate change and try to make a living out of agriculture, which you described very well, the hardship and the cumbersomeness of that?
So we are in a, I think unlike other countries that actually surround Malawi, we are a landlocked country. For starters, and number two, we do not have as many minerals as other countries. Yeah. So literally agriculture is survival. It's about the national growth. Yes. But it's also about survival. So as in the next 5 years, what I see happening now is if the communities that we work with, for example, the communities we work with in CARE, we are encouraging more and more irrigation. So we are saying, let us not depend on rain-fed agriculture right now. But even to move to irrigation, it means you have to have resources. So that's why organizations like CARE are there bringing in these alternatives to say, okay, you have a 5-year goal of purchasing an irrigation machinery. Let's start saving through the village savings and loans. As a group, we can purchase, we can go full scale into irrigation farming. And if we didn't do well during the rain fade season, we have the winter season where we can use our rivers and our lakes to help with that. Others actually might ask, like, you're a country surrounded by water. Why hasn't this happened before? It's because we have never experienced this massive change in climate before. It's now that is happening that we are like, oh, no, we cannot depend on seasons right now. It's so unpredictable. And even when, even right now, there's this crop that is going on, we have a heavy infestation of locusts that are going on. We have locusts. And you know, locusts thrive when you have had such dryness and then heavy rainfall is coming. So they are thriving and they're eating up the maize, sorghum, millet that people have planted in the crop. So what is survival right now is let's do agriculture that is sustainable, agriculture that does not depend on weather, but also agriculture that, you know, the farmers themselves are choosing. And that is why we are continuing with the demonstration plots. We're using our farmer field business approach where we take farmers to say, this is what you know. So we have a model garden and another garden where we then bring in to say, this is how we can change our agriculture using technology and new methods of doing agriculture on a sustainable scale. Then the community sees these model gardens and then they themselves make the decision to say, this is what works for us. And we do not stop there. We know that there is fees to be paid for children in schools. There are other basic needs that are needed at household level. So there is need to have this entrepreneurship aspect. So we are strengthening and working hand in hand with others to make sure that we are not just doing production. We are moving from production to see how do we value add to the crop? How do we make sure that this is even being exported to neighboring countries? And Malawi is good in rice farming, for example. How do we make sure we're exporting to our neighboring countries? So those are things that are now coming up as survival mechanisms. But in the long run, they will also help us in this climate crisis. But it cannot happen with the communities alone. As I've just shared with you right now, as we are speaking, 2 weeks ago, I was in the community and people are like, if this crop fails, we have exhausted our crop that we usually, our seed that we usually keep in our grain banks was washed away by the flooding that happened 2 years ago. So right now we are depending on external seed supply. If this one fails, we have exhausted our village savings and loans. So which one will be our next thing now. So that's what we are grappling with as, you know, as development workers, as care, and the wider community, to say we're just hoping for the best and that nothing else happens. And there is some crop that is saved that then makes it to the next growing season.
I think this was an excellent picture that you draw for us, how things work on the ground. And as you mentioned, it is not enough to do it just on community level. Now, my next question to you is, do you think, that you are a regular attendee at all the COPs, do you think that the international community does enough to support countries like Malawi in their struggle? Because this struggle is twofold somehow. You need agricultural production to satisfy the hunger of your own population. So this is what you call the matter of survival. This is one aspect. And the second aspect, which is not definitely not alone taking place at community level, is the economic aspect. You shared that Malawi exports rice. We all know that rice needs a lot of water to grow, especially rice. Do you think that there is enough support first in the region of Southern Africa? Is there a good collaboration with the neighboring countries to fight back the impact of climate change, and also in the global context from your point of view?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Andrea. And I would say that within the region itself, there are mechanisms, there are programs, there are policies that are being put in place for that inter-country trading to take place. At a massive scale, you know, for you to export, you need loads of tonnage, whether it's rice, whether it's maize, whatever it is, you need to export in large tonnage. And the challenge that we are faced with at the moment is to produce that tonnage. How do we export more when we can barely feed our own population? So that is the problem that we are facing, to say sometimes you might have the favorable environment in place. You might have the tariffs being removed to export, but you have to save yourself. Even when you're like in a plane, they say first put on your mask before you help others, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So
we are in a situation where we're like, first of all, let us help ourselves. We would not want to be in this situation as a country. I mean, we have been a developing country for years, but because of these climatic impacts, it's really pushing us back and back in terms of the development trajectory. If you talk to anyone in this region, everybody would like to move. For example, Malawi is a least developed country. Everybody has aspirations to move to a middle income country, but it's failing at the moment because of these climatic impacts. No matter what programs we are putting in as a nation, the budgetary support, if we don't take into consideration that there is this, we cannot depend on rate fade alone. We are sort of making one step forward and minus two steps backwards. That's the situation. Now, for our multilateral processes like COP, when we go into those spaces, as CARE and working together with the governments, we want to showcase that reality into those documents. So it's really saying, this is the reality. As people are pushing back on money that has to be sent to support, we have to bring in that reality to say, hey, this is what climate is doing. As we are on our way to 2030, where we would want to meet the sustainable development goals, countries like Malawi and others that are still struggling won't find themselves there because they are found with a double burden of climate. No matter how much there is progress in terms of allocation of resources, if you do not consider climatic change, then you are just circling around the same place. So we want this to be shared within those processes, come out within the documents, even come out within the financial instruments that come out of processes like COP. So when money comes, we want that money to reach the women-led organizations that we are working with, because they are on the front lines of these climatic impacts. And also there's less administrative costs when it goes straight to those responders. So as CARE and others, we are there pushing for women-led organizations, women's rights organizations based in the communities to access money from these multilateral processes. Access has to be easier. And that's why we have to go in and out, year in, year out, because we have to make it very clear that this is a case of survival for communities that are living on the front lines. As I was at COP29, Malawi was still reeling out of Cyclone Freddy that hit Malawi, Mozambique, Madagascar. Communities have not yet, some are still in tents as we speak, Andrea. Some are still living within the tents, and it's been 2 years. So why are we still in this situation? It's because as governments, we're trying to respond to that. Then you're faced with the drought. Then you're faced with the flooding in some part of the country. So money is being split to respond instead of going into those long-term aspects. So we need the support and you know, the understanding of everyone across the globe to say, this is why climate finance needs to go to those that it is intended to. It has to be easily accessible, but also it has to come more than what it is at the moment, because there are these lifelines that we are dealing with. Just to share, Cyclone Freddy in Malawi alone killed over 500 people. You know, when you say the number, it's just like a number. When you count the number of people that have been killed by climatic impacts in the country for just this past 5 years, you're talking of 5,000 people that have lost their lives. And this is just not a number. This is someone's mother. This is someone's auntie. This is someone's daughter and children that have gone missing because of this flooding, and because there is not that enough preparation, because our budgets are already stretched.
It's about people like you and me, and CARE is advocating a lot to look also behind the numbers, because then things become more tangible. Another factor that adds to what you have said, and this is something that also CARE as a big global organization is really struggling with, is these multi-layer emergency situations that we are facing, like you described. There is drought, there is flooding, there might be in some other places the Malawi conflict, many things that come together and many things that came to stay for many, many years. And this makes it very difficult also for the providers, the institutional donors, and also for private donors, because listening to CARE, to the communication, sometimes you might think, I don't know where to start. But the important thing is not to be overwhelmed and to take concrete actions. And if you want to help and to donate, then the organization of CARE and CARE Austria and all CARES are a good entry point, not only to talk about how difficult and how threatening the world is and climate change and whatever is, but really to take action and save lives of people and reduce numbers of people affected. This is really key. Before we wrap up, I want to, because you mentioned it in many ways, and some of our listeners, they might know, they for sure know, that CARE is focusing on women and girls, which does not mean that we do not help men and boys, of course, but we have a special focus also on women and girls. So, Chikonye, maybe you can frame briefly why women and girls are differently impacted by climate change than men and boys.
Yeah, absolutely. So you are very right, Andrea. CARE works with women and girls And we have specialized programs where we engage men and boys to really support the work for women and girls. So studies upon studies and even daily observations have shown how climate change impacts women differently from men. The reason I speak from the agro-based economy that is Malawi, most of the food production at household level is in the hands of women. Men are responsible mostly for cash crop. Mostly. So when it comes to sustaining children's nutrition, making sure that the household has food on the table, the responsibility rests on the woman. So if we target our programs specifically for the woman, then we are ensuring that there is enough food for the table, and that is also supporting for that household to go into cash-based ventures. We are here talking about meeting those basic needs. And the second thing that I would like to share is that as CARE, we work to ensure that the women are able to understand their confidence and their agency through our approach of working through the women village savings and loans, for example, and other women organizations at the grassroots level. Because when an emergency strikes, the first responders we have seen and studies have shown us, it's women. Women are there. We have seen pictures, maybe some of you have even seen pictures of a woman grappling to a tree, holding on to children. And you're like, where are the men? The men are there, but then men are usually maybe out there, maybe looking out for the livestock. But for survival, you will see pictures of women and children. So when we target women, we have a whole society approach that we do get to, because women will get to the men, will get to the boys, and will get to the girls as well. So we really want to have this approach where our entry point is filtering to the whole community, and our entry point has best been women. The other thing that I wanted to share with you, why women-led organizations matter in our aspects of climate change, is sustainability. Women know best the soil. They are the custodians of the land. They are custodians of traditional crops and also the custodians of culture. Environment, trees, and nature usually rests in the hands of the women. So we have to target the women, because we know that then we are preserving those cultural values within the community when it comes to preservation of trees, preservation of land, using the sustainable practices that we will introduce in the community, making sure we work on mixing different crops, not just sticking to one. The women are able to do that. And once there is that progress, you know, because we are talking about moving and graduating to another level, then it is easier for men and others to embrace that. Because even when you do want to do cash crop, you need food in your stomach. So they depend on the women to do that. And that is what we have seen through and through.
This is absolutely true that you need something in your stomach when it comes to economy of a country. And I think this is a very clever approach that CARE is taking in Malawi. I'm remembering situations many, many years ago when I had worked on a regular basis in Ethiopia, where I saw families where the children were fed with only the scraps of the potatoes, and the real potato was sold on the market. So it is very, very true that people who should first sustain their own life, as you said, we hear it wherever we have to go, and then they can contribute in a better manner also to the economy of their own country. Tikwanji, we could go on for a long time, but we have to come to an end. I hope that our listeners got now really firsthand insight from a country in Southern Africa, from Malawi, and from my colleague and expert, Chikondi Chaputo. Thank you so much for taking the time talking to us. If you like our podcast, then please recommend it to your friends, to your colleagues. You find it on all podcast platforms. And don't hesitate to get in touch with CARE, and please take action. Support our work, then you support not only women, but you support civil societies in many, many countries. Our example of today was Malawi. So, Chikondi, thank you very much. And I hope I see and hear you all at the next episode of our CARE in Action podcast. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea.
Thanks for listening. This was CARE in Action, the podcast of CARE Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager. For further information, go to care.at. Sponsored by CC Real.